We'll resume arguments in number 1033, Webb's Fabulous Pharmacies against Beckwith. You may proceed whenever you're ready, counsel.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The case before this court that we started yesterday presents a very simple question. That question is interest earned on money in the registry of the court in the state of Florida, private property which can be afforded the protections of the Fifth and the Fourteenth Amendments to the United States Constitution. Construing Florida law, the Florida Supreme Court said no, that it is not private property, that it is in fact public monies, referring to the interest. There is no common law right to earn interest on monies. If you earn interest on money, you've got to look to a statutory right or a contractual right. The general rule is that if interest is earned, it will follow the principle unless otherwise provided. Florida provides otherwise. The statutory scheme in Florida says that the government will benefit from that interest, and it will go to the benefit of all the people. That statutory scheme does not interfere with the judiciary in any way. It does not present any anti-Republican problems for this court to be considered. In the jurisdictional brief that I presented to this court, I represented that particular argument raised by appellant, that it is that violates the separation of powers, was not properly raised before the Florida Supreme Court. The question must be specifically raised and stated with specificity. The question before the Florida Supreme Court, and the one that they answered, in paragraph 5 of their opinion, stated that the separation of powers doctrine was not violated as it applied to the Florida Constitution. The allegations made were that the separation of powers was violated according to the Florida Constitution and other similar provisions. That does not meet the rule for bringing to this court a question of whether or not it violates the United States Constitution. The cases in that area, however, all talk about one branch of government usurping or invading the powers of another branch. That's not what happened in this case. The law in this case says that the money is in the registry of the court, it earns interest, and that interest goes to the county. The court in that case attempted to utilize that statutory provision by picking and choosing those parts that it liked and ignoring the parts that it didn't like. If there were any usurpation here, it was by the judiciary and not by the legislature. The court finally exercised its inherent power, took the money out of the registry of the court, put it in the hands of the receiver, where then the interest on the monies on the principal that was put into the registry of the court in this interpleader action went to those people who were ultimately decided to be the owners of the principal.
I think I put a question either to you or your friend yesterday. I'd like to go back to that. Suppose they had deposited physically high-yield government bonds paying 8%, 9%, 10%, and there were no services that need to be performed, no investment of the property, just a matter of keeping them in a secure place. The statute would, the Florida statute, operate on the coupons that were clipped?
No, sir, it would not. It applies only to monies, and it specifically says monies. If it were held as in custody, simply the bonds, the physical bonds themselves, whatever coupons would accrue or interest would accrue, would go with the bonds. But if money is deposited, and the statute specifically speaks to money, then interest earned on that money must go to the county, or it accrues to the benefit of the clerk and passes through to the county.
Your opponent here sues here on behalf of the receiver for the creditors, does he not?
Yes, sir, Mr. Justice Rehnquist. In fact, My opponent here is the receiver.
He is the receiver. And under Florida law, does his fee for services as receiver come off the top, so to speak, regardless of whether the creditors are paid in full or not?
That's my understanding of the law, yes, sir. The problem in this case was, as I pointed out, the court attempted to utilize a statutory vehicle selectively. The court had the power, the inherent power, all the time to put the money with the receiver and earn interest for the benefit of the creditors. If equity demands it, and in this case it probably did, but it was the judge who didn't take action until 1 year after the monies had been in the registry of the court. If equity demanded that interest be earned on a huge sum of money, as this was, $1.8 million, that judge should have at that time not left the money in the registry of the court, but ordered that money in the hands of a receiver to earn interest for the beneficiaries, for the creditors. The question basically is, what constitutes property rights? This court in 1945, in the case of United States versus Willow River Power Corporation, indicated that not all economic interests are property rights. Only those economic advantages are rights which are backed by law. The case most often cited for the rationale for determining property rights, which are properly protected by the Fifth and the 14th Amendment, is the case of Board of Regents versus Roth. This court said that property interests are not created by the Constitution. Rather, they are created and their dimensions are defined by existing rules or understandings that stem from an independent source, such as state law. In this regard, I would suggest that appellant's brief and the argument before this court is more important for what it does not say than for what it does say.
Well, do you think a state may simply define property in any way it wants to, free of any inhibitions of the federal Constitution?
No, sir, I don't believe that's the case. But I believe in the case where you have absolutely no common law right, where you must look to a statutory right or a contractual right, that would be the case. Unless there was a common law right to property that you can show, then you must look to the statutory rights which would be created by the state legislature or some contractual right. Receiver does not say that there was a common law right to interest because there is no common law right to interest. He does not point to a federal statute which allows him interest or gives him a right to interest because there is no such statute.
There was interest. That's the point.
Yes, sir.
There was interest, even though he, perhaps the clerk of the court was not under any duty to invest the monies in a way that would create interest. But here he did.
Yes, sir, he did.
And so we're really talking about to whom does that interest constitutionally belong?
That's correct. In fact,
there was interest.
Yes, sir, there was. $92,000 worth.
Right.
That sum now is in excess of $100,000 because the
interest... A state legislature can't just, by calling something public money, take private property without compensation for it. It couldn't just take somebody's house in Florida and say, hereafter, John Jones' house will be public property. It's got to pay John Jones if it wants to take him.
Mr. Justice Stewart, I agree with that wholly, that they may not do that. In this case, they did not do that.
So, but it doesn't really answer the problem here to say, well, this is public property, does it?
What we're looking for is a definition
under
of property,
law.
And we're going to have to go to the cases where this court has construed that definition of property. If I own a home, I have a common law right. There is a right.
Well, if I own money, I have a common law right to keep
it. That's correct. You have no common law right to earn interest on that money, to have interest paid on that money. You have a statutory right and a contractual right.
But don't I have a common law right to keep that money if I get it?
Yes, sir, you do.
Interest. Huh?
Yes, sir.
But he didn't get the money.
Well, that's not the question here. The question is who the person but that had
you,
the money.
Didn't you say yesterday that the state can say that whole $1.8 million The state could take that if it wanted.
No, sir, I did not say that.
Well, you said it was public property.
I said that the state could not take that without paying just compensation for it because that
is...
How
could it take the interest?
Because there's no right to earn interest. The statute created the interest. The statute dictated where the
interest...
Excuse me.
The statute created the interest?
The statute created the vehicle through which the interest was earned. Without the statute, the clerk...
The vehicle was the taking of the property. The $1.8 million.
No, sir. That was an alternative that was exercised.
Who owned that $1.8 million?
Eckerd of College Park.
During the time, sir?
Eckerd of College Park was purchasing Webb's Fabulous Pharmacies.
And when it was put in the registry of the bank, it became state property.
That was an option that they had, to put it in the registry of the court and interpleader, which they did.
My question was, it became state property.
Yes, sir. According to Florida statute, that
became... Could the state take it?
No, sir, not without just compensation.
Well, what other state property can the state not take?
Real property. Any property in which you have a statutory right. Any real property or any property defined
by
common law.
Well, then it's not really the state's property to do what it wants with it, is it? Is it?
Question here. No, sir.
But it can do one thing. It can take the interest.
It can invest that money. The clerk could not invest that money without statutory authority. We're talking about interest that was earned. It may not otherwise be earned.
Well, could the state have said that you could do it?
That
you could collect the interest on that property and keep it?
That I could do it?
Or? Yes, sir.
Well, the state doesn't say that. It says that if you are using the registry of the court, if you're using a public official, when you give that public official money, then you are utilizing that state public official, and that money becomes public money, and he is responsible for that money.
Do you think
and you
that
you paid $9,000 for that
service?
That's not necessarily
right.
So. That is a fee that you must pay.
That's
yes,
right.
Sir.
And in addition to that, I hate to use the word confiscate the interest.
Absolutely not. That's not a proper word at all.
It's cheap.
No, sir. That's not a proper characterization either.
Well,
the proper characterization is that the
take a good word.
Property was not taken.
The interest wasn't taken.
It belongs to the public.
The interest was decided by the Florida Supreme Court to be public money. The money was put into the registry of the court, Justice Marshall, by Eckerd Pharmacy. That was an option they had. The money could have been handled by the bankruptcy court. The money could have been handled by the receiver initially, in which the rules of the court would apply. In the former, the rules of bankruptcy would apply. They opted for this particular remedy, and when they do, they must follow the statutory requirements in order to exercise their right under that remedy.
A question about the statutory requirements.
Yes, sir.
As I understand it, it's the statute in Appendix B to the... your opponent's brief, the Investment Accounting Funds 28.33, which provides that the clerk shall make an estimate of his projected financial needs and shall invest funds in designated depositories. Now, as I understand it, the funds described in that statute include those funds that a private party deposits with the clerk.
Yes,
does it therefore mean that the clerk could use those funds for the general purposes of the county because they come within the statutory description of all funds subject to his control, which are to be invested in a particular way?
No, sir.
Why not?
Not?
What's to prohibit that?
The funds are put in into the registry of the court.
More specific, could he commingle those funds with county funds? And if not, why not?
Well, he cannot commingle them with county funds, which may be spent for general county purposes, because the statute specifically requires that these be kept in a separate fund, but that they be invested. Then, at the end of every calendar year.
But this statute doesn't require separate accounting for deposited funds.
No, others do.
So there are more statutes that control this case than the one in
yes,
the
end.
I see. Could the clerk make any use of the money that's deposited with him other than to earn interest by its deposit?
No,
could
sir.
Could he pledge it or anything like that?
No, sir.
But he can make one use of the private party's funds.
That's correct. I'd like to point out to the court that a number of cases have been cited for the proposition that interest should go to the successful litigant. I would suggest to this court that they fall into two categories. One is that there is no state or federal statute involved, and in that case, and in every case cited where they fall into that category, the courts followed the general rule, that is, that the principle followed, or the interest followed the principle. That's in the absence of a state or federal statute. And in all of the other cases, every case cited, the state statutory scheme was followed. That was the other category, was where the cases fall where there is a statutory scheme. For instance, in the case of Sellers v. Harris, cited by appellant, the Supreme Court in that case looked at two articles in the state of Texas. One was a general, characterized, and I quote, general statute on public monies. The other was a comprehensive, I quote again, characterized by the court as a comprehensive statute for handling trust funds. The court in that case decided that these monies are trust funds and applied the proper statutory scheme to them. In the other cases, and for instance, Metropolitan Water District of Southern California v. Adams, in that case, the interest didn't go to the successful litigant. The interest went to the depositor of the original funds. That case, if that case were followed, the person, the proper party to get the interest would be Eckerd's, not the receiver. Because what happened there, it was a condemnation case. The water district put money into the registry. The successful litigants were those people whose property were taken. They took their money out. While it was there, it earned interest. It didn't go to the property owners. It went back to the water district. That was the court's version in Metropolitan Water District. And the other cases are the same. The court found a statutory scheme to follow, and they followed such a scheme. Appellant has shown what the federal courts have done in the absence of a general statute. He has cited various states to show how the states handle the same problem. It becomes painfully obvious that state statutory schemes vary quite broadly, just as property rights vary from state to state. Water rights, for instance, in Texas are almost opposite.
Do you happen to know, because I don't find in the briefs, the citation of the Florida statute that requires the clerk to keep these funds separate?
No, sir, right offhand, I do not.
It's not cited in the briefs of the opinion of the court.
No, sir. At the time, that was really not a question. The question was that we have addressed, I believe, exhaustively, is whether it is property or not, to make that determination. I believe that's the key here. But again, the property rights in the various states are very widely. For instance, as I pointed out, water rights in Texas are almost diametrically opposed to the same right in Florida. Appellant wasn't in a Texas court. He wasn't in a California court. He wasn't in an Oregon court. He was in the Supreme Court of Florida, and that court characterized the money under Florida law as public money.
But if he had had $1 million wherever, in whatever of the 50 states he was, a state court couldn't conclusively characterize that as public money, could he? Could it? I mean,
no,
there comes
no,
a point at which it is property, whether the state court says it's property or not.
The problem with this case is that this is pre-judgment. There's no determination as yet by the court as to who owns the money. So the money, when it goes into the registry of the court in that instance, is pre-judgment. All of the cases that say that interest goes to the owner of the fund are post-judgments, where the interest is, or the principal has been determined and the court is holding it for the owner. In those cases, interest
is not owned by the clerk of the court, isn't it? That much is clear.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
The one thing that is clear is the money is not owned by the county.
That's correct. I would suggest that this court has said what constitutes property for purposes of the Fifth and Fourteenth Amendment, and the court has said that it's a matter for the states to determine. Florida has characterized the money in question here as public and not private, and therefore found no taking. This court should respect the right of the Florida legislature and the Florida Supreme Court to say what is property in Florida. Florida law creates the property. The U.S. Constitution protects the property, not vice versa. Thank you.
Mr. Stewart, before you sit down, I have one little trouble with your statute. This is a sentence from 2833. Monies deposited in the registry of the court shall be deposited in interest-bearing certificates Now, if it stopped there, there would be compulsion to make it productive. But it goes on to say, at the discretion of the clerk, I think there were remarks made yesterday that there was no obligation on the part of the clerk to invest. What do the words at the discretion of the clerk modify? I would have thought in first reading that it meant that he had discretion in the investments he selected and not in the duty whether to invest or not.
Yeah. Mr. Justice Blackmun, that is my interpretation, and I believe the Supreme Court of Florida's interpretation of that statute, that he shall invest the money. The discretion is where he invests it. There are a number of things under Florida law that allows him to invest it in different types of securities, in bonds.
In other words, there is a mandate to invest, and
yes,
the discretion is as to the selection of the investments.
Yes, sir. The modification.
I think there were remarks made yesterday, perhaps by your opponent, that there was no duty to invest.
I believe you're correct.
Well, you've told us that this morning. You've told us that this morning, have you not? That there's no duty upon the clerk to invest the monies that are paid into the registry of the court.
No, sir. I don't believe so.
Well, I misunderstood you then.
That's what you did say.
That he must invest.
The statute says he shall, and then it's modified. But the modification, I believe, is to the clause that follows, and that is where the monies get invested.
Okay. Maybe Mr. Alper will have something else to say on that.
Mr. Alper?
Mr. Justice Blackmun, to respond to that for a moment, looking at the decision of the Supreme Court of Florida, the Florida Supreme Court said, quote, "It is the statute itself which gives the authority to the clerk and outlines the method of disposition. So I believe insofar as the question of whether there is a requirement or an option to investment, that helps. I believe that the statute, by plain reading, indicates that the clerk may invest at interest but is not so required. As far as the characterization...
You are in disagreement on this. Maybe it isn't very important, but I take it there is no authoritative Florida decision.
To our knowledge, Mr. Justice Blackmun, that is correct.
All right.
I would also suggest to the court that special consideration be given to this statement by the Florida Supreme Court. Quote, "These funds are considered," in quotes, "public money," close quotes, "from the time they are deposited in the general registry of the court to the time they leave the account," close quote. I would point out as well that in condemnation cases in Florida, Florida follows the rule set out in the case of Sarasota versus Birch that interest on condemnation monies follows the principle.
Let me ask at this point, suppose these were clearly county funds, wholly apart from Eckert's and Webb's and so forth, and the county had an excess of funds, $1 million. Must the clerk invest them?
Mr. Justice Blackmun, I don't know, and I have never been asked that question before. I would suggest to the court in closing that the situation here is analogous to love and marriage. You can't have one without the other. You can't have principle without interest. You can't have love without marriage. It's true that you can have physical love without the benefit of marriage, and that you can have principle without benefit of interest. But if there is going to be a marriage, one has to have love to sustain it. And if there is going to be interest, one must own the principle to receive it.
In your receivership, presumably there are monies invested with banks or in securities that will eventually bring some return over and above the principal they started out with. Now, in the final accounting of the receivership, won't the accountant and the receiver and the attorney be paid right off the top to the frequent debt, not necessarily detriment, but so that the creditors may not even receive their entire principal?
Mr. Justice Rehnquist, I have already distributed to the creditors the bulk of the estate. My fee was a small portion of the amount of interest which was earned on it during the time that I held it, so that the creditors benefited from the money being held outside the court in that they received a portion of interest.
Isn't it possible, though, under Florida receivership statutes or any other receivership statutes, that a receiver, accountant, lawyer, anyone else who aids in the costs of administration of a bankrupt estate or receivership estate will get paid first so that the creditors get only a portion of the principal and no interest, even though there may have been interest earned?
Mr. Justice Rehnquist, that is possible. I don't know that it is applicable to this particular case, but it is indeed possible. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next.